From the home of the Codebreakers and the birthplace of modern computing, this is the Bletchley Park podcast.
This is MC Fontaine welcoming you to another Bletchley Park podcast extra. Her Royal Highness the Duchess of Cambridge visited Bletchley Park on the 18th of June to mark the official opening of the £8.5 million restorations. But there was also a much more personal reason for her visit, as both her paternal grandmother and great-aunt worked in Hut 16 at the Government Code and Cipher School during World War II. Lady Marion Body worked alongside the twins, Valerie and Mary, and one of the highlights of the royal visit was when Her Royal Highness sat down with Lady Body to find out more about what her grandmother had done during the war. Podcast host Catherine Lynch spoke to Lady Body a few weeks before the special day to find out more.
Tell me, when did you first meet the twins?
I can't remember the exact date, but we went to a secretarial college, Mrs. Horster's secretarial training college, which was a very old established affair, but we were evacuated from London to Lincolnshire, and it was a bitterly cold house, and we were in dormitories, and I shared one of the dormitories with the twins. So we got to know each other really very well. But at the end of our training, we divided up. We did secretarial work. I don't know quite what they did. Waiting to be called up, having volunteered for the Wrens, and I suddenly found myself sent down to Bletchley. And I went into the Japanese section as a Foreign Office typist. And I was there some months doing shift work. It was fine. I quite liked it. And then one morning, we came in on the day shift, a group of us, and we were told this unit is being reorganised. And I was told to report down to one of the huts. I think I must have been taken down there because I wouldn't have known where to go. And they opened the door, and there wasn't a typewriter to be seen. It was just pencils and masses of paper. But in the corner were sitting the twins, Valerie and Mary Glasborough. And of course, I was absolutely delighted to see them. And we'd both been there for some months, but we'd never realised it. It was extraordinary, but then there were 9,000 people working shift work, so perhaps it's not really surprising.
So it must have been great fun to get back together with them. It sounds like you were good friends.
The work was so tedious that it was rather good to have some company. We all got on extremely well and made the best of it, but it was certainly terribly tedious.
And what were they like? Obviously, Kate's going to remember them older.
Well, we were
older,
all young girls together. We weren't in uniform, of course. We were about 20. I think we all had our 21st birthday party on night shifts at Bletchley. I do remember that. But we were good friends, yes.
And there was a great social life at Bletchley, I gather.
Well, they tell you that. But those of us who arrived later, I think, were billeted a long way away. And if you went to something in the evening, how did you get home at night? So, no, I think some of our younger ones, it wasn't particularly, but a lot of people did enjoy the social life there. Yes, we went to the odd dance and there were concerts, but it was quite difficult, actually, if you were on shift work.
I think the Wrens at Stanmore and Eastcote had a slightly more roaring time.
Yes, they did. They used to have wonderful dances at the Abbey. They did.
They were a lot closer to central London, of course.
We could go up to London on our days off. But we hear about this social life, and indeed there was, and I think for those who are on day shift, it must have been quite good.
So if the twins went to her secretarial college together, it's quite amazing they managed to stay together in their posting at Bletchley.
Yes, it was.
Were they civilians?
Yes, we were Foreign Office typists, and like a lot of people who could have wore uniform, we didn't. I think that was partly a security thing. I don't think uniform was particularly encouraged, so some people did wear it. But the Wrens were certainly in uniform.
And was it important for them to be together? Were they very close-knit?
Yes, I think it was. And then there's this curious thing that when they married a pair of brothers and both became Mrs. Middleton. I think that must be fairly unique.
Did you know them later on after they married?
Yes, we kept up for some considerable time, and I went and stayed with them in their house in Yorkshire, and I think they came down to my home in West Sussex. But somehow or other, as one does, we drifted apart. I think it's because they were married. I went and worked abroad for a bit, and that just happened. I was very sorry. It was very sad that we haven't met up again.
Of course, you lose touch with all sorts of people over the years, don't you, very naturally?
Well, one does, and life moves on. After all, it's 70 years ago. And so it wasn't until much later, when we were living here, until very recently, that I realised that Valerie was the grandmother of Kate Middleton. I used to see Kate walking down the hill from her parents' house, walking round the village where I live, with her dog. And like everybody else in the village, we sort of said hello when we encountered her. But we knew exactly what was happening, and so we were all very discreet. And, you know, didn't want to bother her, but we enjoyed talking to her occasionally. And then it was just before she was married, very shortly before marriage, I read something about her family in the newspaper and suddenly realised, well, of course, Valerie Glasborough was the girl I knew at Bletchley, and she was Kate's grandmother. But I never had the opportunity to tell Kate that.
Would you have wanted to chat to her about it?
I'd rather like to have told her about it, because she shared a rather special moment at Bletchley with me. It was the 15th of August, 1945. I think it was in the afternoon. Valerie and Mary and I and two other girls were on the day shift, which was rather fortunate because Commander Williams, our superior officer, came into the room smiling and he said, "Well done, girls. The signal has been intercepted from Tokyo to Geneva, and the Japanese are surrendering." And we just sat there in complete silence. And then Commander Williams shuffled about, and then he said, "Well, you bloody well get on with your work now," which broke the ice. We all laughed. And then he did say, "A message has gone to the King and to the Prime Minister, and I'll come back when it's been confirmed, because it cannot be announced until Geneva has sent on the message to London, for very obvious reasons, because they would have known we'd have been listening."
So was it an intercepted message or was it an announcement?
Well, I think it was a plain language message. It was intercepted, yes. I can remember his words. "A message has gone to the King and the Prime Minister." I don't know how they did it. Teleprinter, I think. A handful of people at Bletchley obviously knew before it became public knowledge.
You knew before the King and the Prime Minister?
I should think about the same time. I don't think they wasted time doing that. But yes, it was a great moment.
So that moment you shared, history clustered around you, if you like, and you were all together at that moment.
Mm. I can see them now, sitting there, and at this moment we just didn't know what to say. We were just silent. It's something that I could never tell anybody that had happened to me, obviously, because we were sworn to secrecy. But it was a great moment to feel that one must have been among the first people who knew that the war had finally ended and 6 years of our life were going to be changed. And I suppose, in a way, all the time I was at Bletchley, that was the moment that one remembers. And it's one that I've remembered all my life.
The lives of everybody that you'd ever met was completely consumed by that war for such a long time.
Well, it was 6 years, you know. It was a long time. And when you're only 19 or 20, 6 years is a long time. I wasn't at Bletchley 6 years, but for people who were, it must have been really quite hard going, knowing that you were there until the war was over. And for many people, it was the sheer monotony. For the codebreakers, I think the tension sometimes must have been terrible. And it was this cloud of secrecy that seemed to hang over the whole park. It really was almost like a cloud.
Well, people in one room didn't know what people in the next room were doing.
No, you never went into anyone's room. You always shut the door behind you immediately. And of course, you didn't talk if you were with somebody. You didn't talk to them about anything to do with your work, ever. You couldn't. because anyone might have, well, the maintenance men or any other staff who didn't know about the ultra secret could have heard. You see, it was absolute no, you didn't.
And people really didn't. And I think people in this digital sharing kind of age that we're in, people struggle with that notion. But it still goes on today where it needs to.
I'm sure they struggle. And one wonders how they could have coped with it. But, well, we just took it in our stride, I think.
It was what was necessary. Yes, you understood that it meant
lives.
Well,
it was so obvious that if the Germans or the Japanese had found out what we were doing, well, I suppose they'd have come and bombed us.
Well, for starters, and then they'd have changed their systems.
Well,
so that would have
goodness
been
knows what would have happened. But I don't think we thought that far. You just did not speak about it. And, of course, it was sometimes rather difficult. You couldn't tell your parents. Or if you got married, you couldn't tell your husband. It was a bit strange.
Was there a moment that was particularly memorable for you being able to tell your husband for the first time?
Ah, yes. That book was published in, well, I forget the date of it.
74.
And my husband came down from London and he'd been in Hatchards and had seen this book, which he promptly bought because he used to always say, why can't you tell me what you did? It's ridiculous. Anyway, he came down and he came through that door carrying this book and I was sitting over here and he put it down in front of me and said, now, will you tell me what you did in the war? And I looked at it in absolute horror and I said, no. But, of course, it gradually came out. I gathered about the Bletchley Park being bought by the Trust again, and so it was obviously all right. But I never liked talking about it for years and years. It's just one didn't.
You'd locked it away, of course. And when you signed the Official Secrets Act, there was no indication that that would be lifted.
Well, we were told it was for the rest of our lives. And that was all very well for the girls, but I think for some of the men who weren't in uniform, and their families did sometimes wonder what on earth they were doing tucked away in Buckinghamshire. You know? I think it must have been very hard for them. You know, why aren't you in uniform? And yet they were probably doing something terribly special. We don't know.
Which made a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
Do you generally have happy memories of Bletchley?
That's rather a difficult question to answer. I think I was very privileged to work there, and you knew however humble a job it was, and good gracious, my job was a very humble one compared with what other people did. You did know that you were doing something very worthwhile, but I suppose some people got fed up at times. But then we were lucky, we weren't in the front line or anything, and as I say, we did know that we were doing something that was very useful in the war effort. And how we got selected, I've no idea.
No, nobody does. So going back to that moment when the announcement was made that the war had ended, did it seem like any sense of privilege or was it just a sort of everything stops kind of moment?
A sense of relief, I think. After all of us who were young girls, we all knew young men who were out fighting somewhere or were prisoners, brothers, boyfriends, cousins. We all had. And it was just a wonderful moment to think that they would actually be coming home.
And did you feel like you wanted to shout about it and go and grab a telephone? And
no, I didn't. I was billeted in Bedford then. So I think we just quietly went home on the train to Bedford. But I do remember we didn't know whether we ought to say anything, because had it been announced by the time we went off duty, I'm not quite sure when it was announced. It might have been an hour or two later. I don't know. But nobody said anything on the train. But perhaps all of us were thinking this. You see, we better not say anything in the train.
How very strange for you to know this and people around
it
you didn't
was. I'm rather vague about that. But I do remember going home on the train quietly.
And thinking, these people don't
yes.
know.
And then when I got back to my billet there, the door was open and the landlady said, "We've just heard the war's over." I just said, oh, how wonderful. Is it really?
Act surprised, you're thinking. Fantastic.
But, of course, we stayed on at Bletchley. The work didn't finish then. We were finally released in April 1946, I think. But, of course, it felt different when you went into work the next day. I suppose there was an atmosphere and people were smiling. And I don't really remember. You just got on with your work.
You must have been at Bletchley on VE Day as well.
Well, I was on leave, actually. So, no, I was sorry about that. I was staying with my parents. But my father had to go up to London the following day, and we'd arranged to go to the theatre that night, my mother, father, and myself. And we did. And of course, London was absolutely seething with people very excited. And my father, who was a very quiet man and had served in both world wars and had a terrible time in the 1914 war, and it was very unlike him, he said, come on, we're going down to Buckingham Palace. And we did, and that was great. So perhaps I did rather well out of that.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
BBC Three Counties Radio broadcast the entire Nick Coffer show from the Oval outside the mansion on the day of the visit. Gareth Lloyd spent a few minutes with Lady Body just after her private audience with the Princess.
Now, there was a very special reason that the Duchess of Cambridge came here today, as well as to mark the end of this whole regeneration project here at Bletchley Park. Her grandmother was at Bletchley Park, as well as her great aunt, and she was able to meet one veteran who actually spent time with her grandma, Lady Body, and Gareth Lloyd got a chance to speak to her a little earlier on.
Lady Body, can you start by telling us about your job and what you did here at Bletchley Park?
Well, I was really at the bottom of a pile, in a sense, because I was a Foreign Office typist, and I started off in the Japanese section, and that was all right. And then one morning we came into work. We were on night shifts, evening shift, but this was, I was on the morning shift. We were told that the unit was being reorganised, and so we were to disperse. So, and I came down to Hut 6, like that, and I wasn't a typewriter to be seen. There was just masses of paper and pencils. And I was put on to helping monitoring the signals that were being caught by the wireless stations. So you had to work entirely in call signs. And so it was desperately monotonous.
Were you aware of what you were doing?
Yes.
And how important it was and how secret it was to the rest of the,
yes,
of the UK?
Yes, most definitely. We were told on arrival that we had signed the Secrets Act and that we were never to talk about this for the rest of our lives. They kept that up for 30 years and then they started writing books about it. Yes, we did realise.
We're in Hut 6 and a lot of money has been spent on Bletchley Park, £8 million with the lottery fund as well. Has it changed much? What does it look like now compared to how it used to look like?
Well, if you can imagine this place on a November day, that's what it used to look like most of the time. It was grey. But everything in wartime was grey. So, you know, you just accepted it. But it was like working in a garden shed.
And today, a very special day. Her Royal Highness,
yes,
has visited Bletchley Park,
yeah,
and came into this room to say hello to you. What did she say to you?
Well, she had been told that I would be here and that I used to work with her grandmother and her twin sister Mary. So it was Valerie was the grandmother. But I'd also been at Secretarial College with them. So I was delighted when I walked into the room and found that the twins here. And there used to be about five on duty, I think, each shift. So I worked quite a lot with them at the same table. And we got on very well. And because it was so boring, I think we just got on well. We had our laughs, we were young. Yes, you just got on with it.
Do you think Her Royal Highness knew much about what her grandmother did here?
No, she didn't, because it's only very recently that people have been felt free to talk about it. And she told me that she knew her grandmother worked here, but she didn't really know what she did. And I can understand that.
What did she ask you?
She just said she was interested about Valerie, and she was obviously very fond of her grandmother, which was nice.
And back here, you being here, do you visit here regularly? Is this the first time back for a while?
I came here when it was first opened. I can't quite remember when that was. I came on my own just to see what was going on. And then 2 years ago, I brought my grandchildren, and we spent a day here. And of course, it had changed a lot, but it's changed even more now. It's beautiful, the park now. Well, I'm glad it is like that.
And a beautiful day for Her Royal Highness to see Bletchley Park as well.
But, I mean, don't think it was a smart place to work, because I assure you it was not.
Her Royal Highness, though, looking very smart today.
Yes, she looked lovely, but she always does.
Nice work, Gareth. Really enjoyed Gareth's reports today on the programme as he's followed the royal party. That was Lady Boddy, who knew the Duchess of Cambridge's grandma when she worked here. And as we've been hearing for many, many years, no one talked about it. No one knew what happened here at Bletchley Park.
Our thanks again go out to Nick, Gareth, Nia and Mark from Three Counties Radio for allowing us to bring our listeners this interview. For more information about Bletchley Park, please go to bletchleypark.org.uk. Remember, you can follow the podcast on Twitter, where we're at BParkPodcast, or you can join the Bletchley Park Podcast Facebook group. You can follow our channel on Audioboo, or subscribe to the podcast via the RSS feed or iTunes. And don't be shy, if you enjoy the podcast, why not just spend a couple of minutes rating it on iTunes? It really helps push us up the iTunes listings, which allows more people to hear about the podcast and hear stories like these from our amazing veterans. And finally, a big thank you to Audioboo, who host the podcast for us. They've just told us that they'll be supporting the Bletchley Park podcast for yet another year. And personally, I'd like to send my thanks to both Amanda and Lance at Audioboo for their amazing support.
Thanks for listening, and we'll have more decrypts from the home of the Codebreakers next month.